Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radio Lab.
Radio Lab.
From
WNYC.
See?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Robert Krulwich.
I'm Molly Webster.
This is Radio Lab, and today
we've got breaking news, Robert Krulwich.
On this is something we've never done before.
Never done before.
What, does anybody know about this yet?
Well, it is a new bit of research. It's being published today.
Uh-huh.
We've known about it for the last few months, but we haven't been able to talk about it until now.
What's this thing about?
Oh, this is a discovery about Alzheimer's disease,
uh-huh.
Which I think at this point is something that affects basically every family.
Affected my family, yeah.
Yeah. And this is a discovery that is not a cure,
mm-hmm.
but it's basically about looking at the brain, which is one of the most complicated things in the universe, I think,
yeah.
and poking at it in this super simple way and getting this bizarre result.
How bizarre?
It's pretty bizarre.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Molly.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right, so last May, I was talking to some folks over at the Brain Institute at MIT, and while I was on the phone with them, they started telling me about some research that hadn't been published yet, so it was all very hush-hush. It was pretty cool, though. We ended up deciding to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and it was based on the work of this woman, Li Wei Tai.
Li Wei Tai?
Tai?
Tai,
okay.
Yeah, I'm a professor and the director of the PCOR Institute for Learning and Memory at MIT.
Holy crap, you're the director. How do you have time to do all that?
I know, that's a good question.
She is like a badass is what she is.
But this is a piece of work I'm very proud of and very excited about.
Okay, cool.
Let me begin.
Okay.
So historically, people work on Alzheimer's really focus
so
a lot.
So I would say generally when you talk to researchers about Alzheimer's disease, they either focus on
Individual genetic factors.
The genetics of the disease, so the genes that predispose you maybe to Alzheimer's.
Or
the brain chemistry and how Alzheimer's affects the chemicals in the brain.
Molecular pathological features.
But in my conversation with Li Wei, she was talking about something totally different.
We sort of look at it from a different angle.
Her work all centers around something called
the gamma frequency.
The gamma frequency?
Mm-hmm.
Gamma.
And what is gamma? I'm like, it feels like something from Battlestar Galactica. So I don't think it's that.
So this gamma, so-called gamma.
You could think of it as a particular beat in your brain.
A beat in the brain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which means what exactly?
Well, just to oversimplify one of the most complicated things in the known universe.
Okay. Please do.
You've got your brain. It's full of neurons, which are a certain type of brain cell.
We have billions of neurons in the brain.
They have these long tentacles that are reaching out towards other neurons.
And for the brain to function, neurons have to communicate with each other to process information.
And the way they do that is they fire.
Yes.
An electrical signal will go through them and it'll like zap another neuron and it'll turn it on, and then an electrical signal will go through it and it'll zap another neuron and it'll turn it on. But the cool thing is that when your brain is doing things like making you move or write a poem or think great thoughts, groups of neurons
fire in sync
all together on the same beat. And there's a bunch of different beats that happen in the brain. Some of them are slow, like one beat per second, and that's when you're sleeping. If you're beating around 10 beats per second, like maybe you're sitting next to a campfire in an Adirondack chair. Or on like the totally other end of the spectrum, like some neurons fire at 600 beats per second.
What are they doing?
That I have no idea.
And all this is going on in your head simultaneously?
Yeah. No, that's the cool thing, is that when all of these beats in your brain come together, that's when you're able to process the world and understand it as it exists as human beings.
Huh.
But getting back to our story, when your brain is doing something really tricky that requires super focused
attention, working memory, and so on.
You're like trying to find your way. home from the subway station, or if you're in a new city, you know, navigate around it. There's a certain beat that sort of rises above them all. And that is
the so-called gamma frequency.
This range between 30 beats per second all the way up to 100 beats per second.
And this gamma frequency has been considered to be very important for the higher order cognitive function.
And the interesting thing is that when you look at an Alzheimer's brain, what you see is there's actually less gamma happening. Or people say, like, the power of gamma is reduced.
Not all the neurons can be recruited to oscillate at the gamma frequency.
It's still there. It's just quieter. It's like you turn the volume down.
Right.
All right, so just to briefly sum up here, what we've got is a rhythm, which we call gamma, which is used when we have complicated or higher thoughts in the brain, which when you got Alzheimer's, kind of gets saggy or tired.
Yeah, or yeah, totally. And of course, obviously, in an Alzheimer's brain, there's a lot going on, and this is just one of the things, right? You've got the plaques that build up around the neurons.
The stuff that gucks up your brain and makes it hard to think.
Yeah, totally. It's like cobwebs in the brain, and then the connections between neurons gets all muddied, and immune cells get messed up. But Li Weitai was like, forget all that. What would happen if I just bring the gamma back?
Yeah. We decided to just manipulate gamma oscillations.
And how do you do that?
Well, hello. Technology.
Hi, this is Molly. Hi.
Technology you can find at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And actually, I went and took a train up to Boston, to MIT, not too long ago.
We're walking into the Big Hour Institute.
It's a big shiny glass building.
Molly, nice.
Eventually, Li Weitai came striding into her office to meet me.
My understanding is that you want to see some of the experimental setup.
And so Li Wei led me down the hall to this tiny room. The mice just entered the room. Oh, yeah. Brought in these adorable little mice.
Oh my gosh, they're like little black and soft and furry.
Yeah.
And their ears are tagged with a little metal tag on
so
them.
Okay, so
here's what they did. They get some mice.
We started off with a mouse model.
Not the mice I actually got all excited over, but mice that have an early stage of Alzheimer's disease.
With multiple notable defects.
Do they have the gunky plaque stuff in them yet, or is that later?
No, but they do have
elevated levels of beta amyloid peptides,
which is this protein that forms the plaques. So it's like basically pre-plaque gunk. But the important thing to Li Weitai and her team is that they have less gamma going on in their brains. If you remember, the whole plan here is to bring the gamma back.
Yes.
So to do that, they get what might be the world's tiniest drill, and they drill a small hole into the skull of the mouse. And then they take a really thin fiber optic cable, they slide it through the hole into the brain. And then they get this laser of blue light
to flicker
at 40 beats per second.
Gamma frequency.
And they turn that on, and the light travels down the fiber optic cable deep down into the brain to this group of cells that they've modified
in the hippocampus
to be sensitive to light. So when this pulsing light hit these cells, they actually began to fire at 40 beats per second.
At gamma frequency.
And they would keep these cells firing at gamma.
For 1 hour.
Firing and firing and firing and firing and firing.
And then after 1 hour,
they turn off the light. And then eventually they started looking at the brains of these mice, trying to figure out if anything was different after the light flashed. And they see,
to our much surprise,
we're not expecting this at all,
we found
after they shot this pulsing light into the brain, there was suddenly nearly half as much of that soon-to-be nasty plaque gunk stuff that was filling up their hippocampus.
Half
of the stuff was just swept away.
Yes. 40 to 50% reduction of beta amyloid.
That just seems crazy.
This is crazy. Yeah. I mean, we were just so surprised.
Do they know why the flood of light would
so
turn out
the pulsing light somehow triggered the brain's cleanup crew.
Microglia.
These cells in the brain that are called microglia.
You can say they're the janitors of the brain.
And in a normal brain, these janitor cells usually gobble up the gunk.
But in Alzheimer's disease, it's known that microglia, then they don't sort of function normally anymore.
It's like these janitors just sort of
stop cleaning up
and go on strike.
There we go. Okay, cool.
Okay, so we're looking at a screen that's now flat. It's not
three. When I was at MIT, one of Li Wei's grad students.
My name is Anthony Martorell, second year.
Was showing me side-by-side comparisons of these mice brains on a screen.
Can you guess what that is?
Which part?
The green things.
Microglia.
Microglia, yeah.
And you see,
after 1 hour of gamma.
Wow, so that, yeah, that
part. The microglia, the cell seems a lot bigger.
Clearly see these round bodies.
Yeah. And also the belly seems to have more amyloid.
Oh, like they're doing more eating.
Yes, they go back to eat more amyloid again.
It's like somehow making the neurons fire turned on the sanitation system in the brain.
But the most wild results.
Wait, there's more wild?
Oh my God, you gotta hear this. Because
okay.
What I'm about to tell you, you may say, no, I don't believe it. It's science fiction. Okay. So,
one of the things Li Wei and her team were starting to think was that drilling and fiber optic cable
is very invasive, right?
You'd never be able to do that on a human.
Exactly. So we started to say,
well, what if we can get the light into the brain in a different way? Like, maybe we could go through the eyes.
So the hole in your head would be your eyes instead of a hole in your head?
Yes.
Hmm.
So Li Wei and her team created what I like to think of as the flicker room. Wait, is this the room?
This is a room. And
okay. It turns out, I learned upon my visit, it is just a storage closet.
You know, you have a, what is this? Just like a plastic table.
Very DIY.
Yeah, it's a plastic table you can buy at Target.
There were some plastic shoebox-sized containers lined up on the table for the mice. And then,
you see the strip?
Around the edge of the table.
Basically surrounding all the cages.
Are duct taped strips of LED lights.
And the reason why we use LEDs is because a regular light bulb, it can't flash fast enough.
And so the idea is, what if we just put the mice in this room and just let the light flicker at 40 beats per second?
So you want to show Molly, like, turn this on?
Yeah. And so we turn off the overhead light in the room, so it's very black. And then, oh, wow. The room was now glowing with this white LED light.
Okay, so the light is turning on and off 40 times a second.
It's so there's, you know, you don't see anything going like on or off. It just looks like something's
exactly
on, but it kind of feels like my eye is twitching.
Exactly.
And so it's blurring the light a little. Just on the edges though.
Yeah, just on the edges.
And so they put mice in this room for an hour and just let them kind of bathe in this glow.
And guess what?
What?
We look at the amyloid beta levels in the visual cortex, and we found there is a 50% reduction.
50%?
50%
just
reduction.
Just from shining light in their eyeballs?
Yes.
Wait a second. They didn't do any drilling in
no,
their skulls or anything?
No, they didn't drill. They didn't tweak the mouse's brain cells to be sensitive to light. This
they
is
just filled the room with occasional LEDs flashing at a particular frequency?
For an hour.
Now do you see? Are you going to tell me I don't believe it? It's science fiction?
And they followed this study up with another study, which was done in the same way, so the same flicker room, light through the eyeballs, and only this time they put the mice in there for 1 hour a day for 7 days, and they took mice that had full-blown Alzheimer's. So this is like cognitive decline, they're forgetting things, and they've got hardened plaques in their brain. And they see the same thing. Nearly half of the stuff was cleared away.
Wow.
Half.
Wow.
It's just flickering light in front of the mice.
That's the shock. I mean, that's the shocking thing. The thing I didn't understand after talking to you about your study was I was like, why hasn't everyone done this before? Like, why didn't everyone go, we should just shine light through eyes?
See, well, you know, that's really the most unexpected and exciting aspect of our study, which is something this simple, yet, you know, it has never been done before. You know,
one of the caveats here is that if you don't do the flicker light room every 24 hours, the level of gunk in the brain starts going back up again. And so now they're trying to figure out how they can keep those levels down, maybe even for good.
If the mouse no longer has quite as much junk in its head, mm-hmm. does that mean that it can remember things that had happened to it, that it gets mentally more acute?
Yeah, that is their big next research. That's
so they
what
don't
they're.
Know.
They don't know. That's what they're. That is now the next step. But nobody really understands how plaques and the gunk buildup in the brain relates to memory and cognition. And the dogma in the field is that when you have Alzheimer's, you can't form new memories, and once you lose a memory, it's gone for good. But there is another group at MIT that is actually sort of challenging that assumption that you can never get a memory back.
Because the patient could never tell us, we all assumed the information had to be gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we'll get to them, but first we have to go to a break.
This is Kevin Murray from Fort Collins, Colorado. Radiolab is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.
Hey, Lulu here. You asked, and we listened. You wanted a Zuzve shirt, and we made one. It is a gorgeous celebration of the liminal being that is Venus's moon / not moon. And you yourself can sport this homage to the unknowable multitudes of those all around you and within you by simply joining the lab. The Lab is our membership program. That is the place where we fight the fight against the fickle whims of the economy to make our show protected from all that based on listener support. If you sign up, we thank you with the brand new Zuzve t-shirt and also ad-free episodes, bonus interviews, and other swaggy stuff like stickers and patches. You can go check out the perks and see if it's right for you by going to radiolab.org/join. And thank you, either way, for being here, for listening to our show. We make it for you, Zve. Anyway, radiolab.org/join. Check it out, and thanks.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
I'm Molly Webster.
This is Radiolab.
And we're back.
And just before the break, you said that there may be a way to bring a memory back from the Alzheimer's disease, mm-hmm. to pull the memory back into place.
Yeah.
Why are we so quick to jump to the conclusion that the information was somehow completely gone?
And the person who said that to me is this guy.
I'm Dheeraj Roy. I'm a fourth-year graduate student in the Susumu Tanigawa Lab.
Over at the Tanigawa Lab, they were thinking, what if we could figure out exactly where the memory should be in the brain and just give that spot a little bit of juice.
Right.
So they took some mice that were just starting to lose their ability to remember things, and they thought, okay, let's try to give them a memory.
We put them in a box that has a particular smell, some sort of lighting, mm-hmm. and some texture on their feet.
A little mouse carpet or...
That's exactly what it is.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Okay, mice on carpets. Got it. The point is, the box looks and feels and smells different than any other box they would hang out in.
And then you give them a light electrical shock.
And the mice... They just freeze.
They don't move at all.
Which is a sign that they're afraid.
They hate the box.
And for the rest of the afternoon, which is a very long time in mouse time, they go on hating the box, which means with the carpet and the light and the smell, if you put it back in there, it'll freeze because it remembers the shock.
Yes.
But...
A day or a week later, which...
When these same mice were put back into the same box...
Instead of being scared of the box, they would just continue investigating as if nothing happened. They could not remember.
So Dheeraj and his team did what Li Wei did. They got some modified mice, and then they put a little hole in their head. They slid in a fiber optic cable. They shined some light to trigger the neurons that they think hold this memory. And they were...
In the fear section.
Near the fear section. So leading on the path to the fear section.
So we do this.
And then...
Put them back into the box.
The box with the particular lighting and smell and carpet.
And ask... Is there any change in their behavior?
Will they act afraid again?
Do they show any more memory? And they did.
Wait, shut up. They actually were scared of the box again?
Exactly. They showed recovered memory.
Wow.
Whoa.
So that's like, bam, that memory's in there.
Exactly. Voila. The behavior was back.
You can dig up the memory by shining light in the right place?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was always under the impression that the memories were totally lost.
Right. So I think that's not just you. I think that's essentially the entire field, what you described.
Okay. Well,
just because...
That's good.
Because the patient could never tell us, we all assumed the information had to be gone.
Huh.
So one of the things to say is that Daraj did tell me that, you know, all of the experiments they did are in mice that have early Alzheimer's. The thought is, though, is that once you get to the late stage of the disease, there's enough damage in the brain that you really wouldn't be able to get those memories back.
That might be right, that a memory lost is just lost. But, you know, when you have someone in your house and you live with this disease day in and day out, the disease just goes its own way.
Mm-hmm.
And it can puzzle you or frighten you or suddenly declare something new that you didn't expect. So, for example, my dad had it for about 9-10 years. It was a slow act of disappearing that he did. Where, I mean, the last time my father came to was so far into the disease, he hadn't spoken for a year and a half. He was sitting at the table for the Passover Seder. And there's a song that you sing, but it goes, Dai, dai, yenu, dai, dai, yenu, dai, dai, yenu, dai, yenu, dai, yenu. So it's just a chorus. And from out of nowhere, this being at the end of the table who I knew was my father, who hadn't spoken in a year and a half or two and had not spoken coherently for three, suddenly flew into the song and sang the song full-throatedly at the table, like the reappearance of some just last figment of himself. And it was both horrifying and extraordinary. Both, you know.
I mean, I think that's the fact that maybe some information still persists. Hopefully someday we could kind of, maybe there's something we could do. But yeah, this is all in my mind at the moment.
As long as we can figure out how to rebuild the pathway to retrieve the memory, then I think there is hope.
This is Liwei Tai again.
But, you know, I personally think the most important question is whether humans respond similarly.
I mean, keep in mind that both Daraj's study and Liwei Tai's are in mice, not humans.
Right. So
And do you have a thought that, like, why, like, is there a reason that a human neuron might react differently than a mouse?
The thing is, I think especially, you know, in Alzheimer's field, I mean, people got burned a lot.
There's, you know, so there's like a 99.6% failure rate in moving something that seemed to work in mice to humans in
99.6%?
Alzheimer's. 99.6? Yeah. Yeah. That was a study that came out in 2012.
That's a horrible number.
So I just got to be really conservative
I'll
here.
I'll dial it back.
You know, what we have in mice, they're just so exciting and so unexpected, so much fun. But, you know, I'm going to keep my mind open when it comes to humans.
The plan is that we're going to find out because they're going straight to humans.
Oh, so they're going to do human trials.
Well, they want to. So, yeah, I guess we'll see.
This is the glorious part of all this. This organ of ours, the brain, is so crazily complicated with, like, whatever, 100 trillion connections or whatever it is. There's so much chance there's going to be a lot of surprise.
Yeah, it's like almost even if it doesn't lead to any treatment in humans or something super concrete, it's like we know this little secret about the brain now. And there's something that feels like beautiful in that.
Yeah, I'm actually setting this up for my Christmas tree.
Are you really?
Yes. Yeah, I just bought the new LED lights, and they can flicker a different color with different colors.
Oh, so each individual bulb can travel through colors, but while they're doing that, they're going to be flickering at 40.
We're going to have a very therapeutic Christmas.
in the Liwei Tai household? This is the tree in your home.
Yes.
Are you
I want to have an eggnog next to that tree.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Molly, for what a remarkable story that was.
You're welcome.
It was also produced by Annie McEwen, Matt Kilty, Molly Webster again, with help from Simon Adler, and special thanks to Susumu Tonegawa at MIT. And thank you all for listening.
Bye.
This is Tiana Brinton calling from LA. Radiolab is produced by Jad Ebenrod. Dylan Keefe is our director of sound design. Soren Wheeler is senior editor. Jamie York is our senior producer. Our staff includes Simon Adler, Brenna Farrell, David Gable, Matt Kielty, Robert Kolwich, Annie McEwen, Latif Nasser, Melissa O'Donnell, Ariane Wack, and Molly Webster. With help from Tracy Hunt, Nagar Fatali, Phoebe Wang, Katie Ferguson, Alexandra Lee Young, W. Harry Fortuna, and Persia Verlin. Our fact checkers are Eva Dasher and Michelle Harris.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.